Hello and welcome to episode 180 of the Saints Score podcast, where we have a look at everything going on at Southampton Football Club. This week, we'll discuss the disappointing evening in Nottingham, where the Saints were on the wrong side of a 4-3 scoreline at the City Ground, and preview what could be a historic game against Fulham for all the wrong reasons. My name's Harry Tizard. I'm joined by Ollie Boast and Jamie Allen. And I'll go to Ollie. How are you doing this week?
Yeah, good. I had a pretty good weekend, actually, but it just seems that everything's brilliant apart from the football. It's just, if I took those 2 hours out that I religiously give to watching Southampton and I just put it to something else, I'll go and get an unlimited film at the cinema or something. Just go get myself one of those cards. Just go and watch that for 2 hours on a Saturday. However, my mood will greatly improve. But unfortunately, that's not the case, is it? We're kind of signed up to this for life. I mean, not the podcast, but you know. I mean, maybe we might be doing this one for 70, like the retirement home, all of us there, like, welcome to episode 2000.
We'll clip back to that bit, Ollie, when we hit.
Yeah. But I'm doing okay. I'm doing all right. I'm resigned to the fact that whatever happened will happen. We've got one more week of uncertainty, and then it will all be done, won't it? We'll have that little R next to our name. Right at the bottom of the league. How's that? Is that a good enough answer?
Lovely to hear. Lovely to hear. And Jamie, how are you doing? And how was your little spell on TV as well?
Oh, hey. Yes. I'm sure that everyone here saw my appearance on Mark Sager's show on Talk TV, where I previewed the Forest game and I did the Saints score proud.
Yeah.
Did it? No, not at all, really. But, you know, if we do have a little R next to us in the weekend,
yeah,
so be it. But we will be there next year, no matter what, supporting the boys in red and white.
Of course.
Well, let's talk about that, you know, game that led up to the moment that could mean, or does mean, that we're on the edge of relegation. We need 9 points out of nine and Forest and Everton to basically do nothing until the end of the season, if we even want to stand a chance. But, you know, that chance is getting slimmer and slimmer against Nottingham Forest. It's a 4-3 defeat. It felt like we had a bit more energy, but we just couldn't get over the line. Ollie, what are your opinions on the game?
I did watch it, and although I felt like we tried hard, it felt that we were never really in control. We had times where under possession we looked potentially threatening, and you can't fault the effort as well. It looked like we did genuinely give our best, but we were just falling into the same mistakes that we've probably said countless times. I'm not going to mention the fact that the defensive side has been poor, questions over should keepers be doing better and things like that. It's a consistent, recurring things that we've had, and it genuinely just feels like we are waiting just to go down and get it over and done with. If there could have been a great result and it did go all our way, then maybe there could be some positivity. But we haven't even had that kind of... when teams get relegated early with like five games left, they kind of have that acceptance. They know they're down and they can start rebuilding. Maybe bring some of the youth players in. Maybe some of the players that have been struggling for form or need a rest can be finally rested. And you can kind of rebrand yourself and play with that little bit of freedom, but we couldn't do that. It was still a kind of scrappy game at times. We were really battling, but we still came off second best, and that means we've given 6 points to Forest, who are a promoted team, and we've looked second best in both of those games now, which is a real kind of indictment to how our season's gone. Again, yeah, second best, really. And just a disappointing game. Although, a bit of a goal fest, at least. Got to see some goals. But, yeah, we're just not good enough in today.
And Jamie, how about you? How do you look at the game that's just gone? Because a lot of the games, I think 10, 11 this season, we've lost 1-0 and it felt that we've been quite passive. But at least in this one, we always almost felt like we were in it due to the fact that when we went 1-0 down, there's no other point that we were level in the game. It's either one goal or two goals, but it felt like we always had the chances. But every time that we got that extra goal, made it 2-1, made it 3-2, we just made it too hard for ourselves, and we gave away another sloppy goal, either transition or a mistake, and it just made it impossible to get back into it.
It's weird this season. It seems like when we concede one, we either just concede that one and do like the classic 1-0 loss, or we concede three or four, but we also get a couple of goals in there. So it's kind of exciting, except that we lose or draw. And considering it's our, 10th winless game in a row now, it's just very, very bittersweet saying, oh, we can play well, but it doesn't matter because they scored more goals. Mm. It's just, there just seems no, there's no in between of the 1-0 or the bigger results. It's very annoying.
Yeah, and 2-0 down pretty early on. Two goals from Tyro Iwuanyi as well. Three of his six this season have come against us. And you look at the game against Nottingham Forest at St Mary's, the 1-0 goal, and you look at the first goal against us this game. The way it happened, it sort of seemed exactly the same. Yes, Lianca made a mistake in the first game, and it sort of came because they broke really quickly from a free kick. They just acted a lot quicker than us. But the cross ball from right to left into the middle of the box, and Brennan Johnson, Iwuanyi's there for a simple finish. You may say that McCarthy could do better, but it is from a really close distance. And then once again, we just can't clear the ball away for the second goal. Danilo pokes it towards the striker, and it's 2-0 once again. Similar to what I said to Jamie Oliver, we just give ourselves too much to do within 20 minutes.
Mm. It's an uphill struggle straight away. And I did feel for the start of the game, the Forest fans were, and I don't think we've mentioned it either. You were at the game, weren't you, Harry? We've completely glossed over this, so we didn't even get your thoughts.
I wanted to ask Harry how his week was, but he just skipped on to.
Yeah, he's such a professional, isn't he? He doesn't let any, he's bang, 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 bang. But I'm going to flip this around on you now. What was the atmosphere like in that? This is proper stuff right now. What was the atmosphere like in the stadium before the Forest goal? Because from what I saw on the telly, it seemed like they started very loud and we had slight moments of danger, and it had a little bit of sense that there could be problems here. And then they scored two goals very quickly, and then they suddenly got back onside. Is that what it was like in the stadium?
I mean, it seems like a football cliche, but the first goal was always going to be absolutely vital. I think I saw on Twitter a few people saying that this is the biggest game since their playoff final last season, because if they lose against bottom of the table, serious, serious troubles. But if they win at home, a second one in a row after beating Brighton, obviously Brighton a lot better than us, but that's 6 points. And they did start really, really loud, especially before the game. That the song that they always sing beforehand got the stadium rocking. And throughout the game, really, I think they were very, very good. That did help that they did score. And I went to the game with my dad and I said to him, look, if we score first, they'll start to quieten down. We can start getting the atmosphere going and it'll go our way. But if it happens the other way around, they'll be able to get on top of us. And similar to what happens, they get that one goal. The whole crowd just lifts them completely. And it's a different game. 3 minutes later, they get their seconds. And everyone just, they just seem to be in control at that point. Both the crowd, in terms of their emotions, have been able to get behind the team. But also the players, they've got confidence running through them. They've just scored two goals in real quick succession. In the way that they really love to do, look at Morgan Gibbs-White, you look at Brennan Johnson, you look at their striker Iwuanyi as well. They're just on a different level, to be honest. The way they're able to get the ball forward quickly and into the dangerous areas, maybe that's just due to the fact that we weren't able to defend against Johnson. Johnson versus Maitland-Niles on the left-hand side was a complete mismatch, but I guess we'll get onto that later. But to answer your question, the stadium atmosphere was brilliant, but also because it should be, it really should be, but they did everything they did. They got all the positives that they could possibly derive out of being the home team. Not that I wouldn't say that it affected us, our team, but it really helped them on. And I think Steve Cooper, I read some of his program notes, always says beforehand in the program notes how important those home fans were, and they really showed it. So I'll flip it back to you, Ollie. The question I had is how difficult have we sort of made ourselves in this whole season? I looked at this game as how we sum up our entire season, the fact that we give ourselves a lot to do, either due to the fact that we lose a lot of games or we go behind in games 1-0, 2-0. And then there's this brief amount of hope where maybe we get a good result in this game. We got a goal and then it's sort of the belief starts to lift. And then something just really frustrating happens. Either a mistake, either something like that, with Maitland-Niles just kicking the back of Johnson's leg when he tries to clear the ball away, doesn't even see him coming. And then that's the definitive moment that really pushes Forrest on and makes it really difficult for us.
I think that was a real summary of our bad luck, that Maitland-Niles clearance. Because, funnily enough, I was watching the City game on Tuesday, and that had the exact same thing with Bernardo Silva on the edge of the box, but he was just about a yard outside the box. Did the same thing. He had eyes completely on the ball, gone for it, and one of the Real Madrid players just stuck his foot in front. He must have been watching the Saints Forest game. That's must have what he'd been doing on the Monday. exactly the same thing, but it's a yard outside the box, so it was a free kick, and Real Madrid got the free kick, and we ended up giving away a penalty. So I do genuinely think it's a kind of unlucky one. It's just kind of a summary of our season. Maitland-Niles, again, I think the whole game, he looked really out of it in terms of he wasn't at the races. He gets constantly questioned for a lot by me as well. He seems like he's running in second, third gear, which is fine if you're controlling the game, if you're playing in a possession-based side, but we're struggling. We need fighters, and he doesn't fight for us, which I think is what some people really struggle with, especially me. So we do make it difficult for ourselves. If you look back to Hasenhüttl, we always used to start firing, and a lot of people said we'd then tail off, and then the mistakes would happen. But we now start games badly, make a mistake, and then get back into the game. Glimmer of hope. Make another mistake and just completely call it off. So think of how many times under Ralph we were, that stat came up about dropping points from winning positions. And you were like, oh, if we could have stayed on, we could have picked so many points. But the worst case scenario, at least we'd drop and maybe get the odd loss, but we'd get draws and we'd pick up a lot of draws. We had that season where we had a stupid amount of draws, but it was points on the board. We consistently lose games from those sloppy mistakes, and we can't even get the goals early to kind of keep us something to hold on for. So yeah, it's individual and kind of constant lapses of mistakes that continue to cost us. And it's the reason we're going down this year. I don't think there's much else I can really say apart from just those constant mistakes, not improving, not picking up those mistakes, but just continuing to do them, has just costed us, not allowed us to put points on the board, and we're going to go down for it.
One person that Ollie mentioned there, Jamie, was Ainsley Maitland-Niles. He was in a new position this game. Normally he's on the right and Kyle Walker-Peters on the left. What did you think about that switch up? Because in my opinion, I think Selles tried to do it to make Walker-Peters the more attacking on the right-hand side, sort of make Maitland-Niles a more defensive one, but also someone that can move into midfield. Did you feel like it worked? Because I looked at it and I thought it wasn't one of Kyle Walker-Peters' best games. I thought he did struggle on that side. And on the other side, Maitland-Niles just, maybe he's passive, maybe it just hasn't seemed to click.
Yeah, I think any time he plays on the left, he's just not comfortable. I'm not too sure what it is, but he's never really shown that fine desire, which he does on the right. I think he's very heavy, mentally orientated when he's playing. When he's in his comfort zone on the right, he can really push forward. But I think he gets in his head a lot when he's on the left, and I think he maybe panics a bit too much. That's what causes mistakes and causes the hesitancy from him. But I'm still a fan of his. I know lots of Saints fans aren't too keen on him, but I think it just is he's not confident and brave enough on the left. And I think Selles should know that by now and think, yeah, it might be a good little tactic to play against Forest to try and switch things up a bit. But right now, we shouldn't be playing those tactics. You should be playing players in the position you know that they're comfortable in, so to get the best results out of them, and considering we are basically relegated now because of that game. Not obviously not solely because of that game, but as a result of that game, we basically are relegated.
Ollie, I saw you shaking your head there. What are your... You sort of mentioned your thoughts on Ainsley Maitland-Niles, and I put my two cents in. A lot of the time, maybe at West Brom, when he was out on loan, people thought he was quite passive, but a lot of the time you can get that from loan players. But he sort of knows his future is going to be somewhere else than Arsenal this next season. So he's fighting for his future, whether it's with us, whether it's to stay in the Premier League. And I think Sellers was maybe forced to play him at left back due to the fact that Perrard was injured, Walker Peters was on the right hand side. Maybe Lianca's more comfortable on the right back position than he is the left. Salisu, I don't know where he is, whether it's injury, whether it's attitude. Sellers seems to put it more down to the injury, but you know, the Athletic does say otherwise. So what are your opinions on him overall?
Well, I think the one thing that everyone when they speak about him is the fact that you can put him into all these different positions and he's a kind of utility player. But if you're consistently poor in most positions that we put you in, apart from sometimes right back and sometimes midfield, I don't think you're providing enough. And there's questions on whether it's a player we'd want to try and keep next year in the Championship. I don't think that's feasible. But I'm also struggling to think who would take the chance on in the Premier League, because I don't think I was going to use the word shone then. I definitely don't think he's shone in our side. And he hasn't really stuck out as a player who seems to be Premier League quality. I always keep looking now at the end of our games and say, who's put like a Premier League performance in? Who's a player who consistently shows Premier League quality? And Lavia is miles ahead in his development and where he is and the individual performances and the differences that he makes in a game compared to someone who is reasonably experienced like Maitland Niles. So if you're one of the other 19 teams in the league at the moment, I know two of them will be joining us in the Championship, but will you go, oh yeah, we should try and get Maitland Niles as he's on a free? Is there going to be anyone in the Premier League that will go, oh yeah, let's snap him up because there's an opportunity there? I don't really see it. And I think he will struggle. I think he's got a lot of kind of assets, that he has these kind of sides to his game, but in terms of performances, we just don't see it. And yeah, it's a shame. It's another one of the countless players we've had where the kind of talent, ability, the ceiling, if you will, of the player is very high, and there's an opportunity for him to be a really high quality player, but it just doesn't seem to work. Maybe there might be somewhere where he fits in and it suddenly clicks and you see this brilliant player. That does also happen, but unfortunately it hasn't clicked at Saints.
No. Another person that their future certainly uncertain is Armel Belakotchap. He came off injured for the fourth time this season. He's missed 15 games through injury this season, but he's one of the people that a lot of people think that he's going to leave in the summer for 20, 25 million, somewhere around that ballpark, with a lot of big teams interested. Jamie, what do you think about the whole situation on Belakotchap in terms of his fitness record? What have you thought about his Premier League season? Because it is over now. He's going to be out for at least 2 months. So he's not going to play maybe another game in a Saints shirt. You never know. And what do you think about his future aspirations as well?
It's weird because obviously you've mentioned his injury history there, and the fact he is getting into the Germany squad over massive German footballers. I think lots of teams will be interested in him. It's just the fact of those injuries. I think we might still see him here as a Santa player in the summer, purely because he's a young player. We'll have to pay a lot for him because he's on a fairly decent contract, unless he has some release clause we don't know about with a relegation. But I wouldn't surprise if he stays, because I don't think teams can really take that risk on him, because, like I said, young, four injuries this year, 15 games missed. That's something you can't skim over. And I'm sure if he has another medical somewhere else, there'd be lots of red flags.
Talk about red flags. There was four of them in that game in terms of four goals conceded. And the last one was Danilo. It was the end of a pretty scrumptious move, if I do say so myself. A lovely flick from Morgan Gibbs-White into his path. And it was a finish for his third goal in three games. Ollie, I look at their January business. Keylor Navas, Felipe and Danilo all came in for fees a lot less than what we did. Do you know what? Their wages certainly going to be high, but they've got a Champions League winner three times in goal. They've got a Champions League level centre-back. And Danilo, someone that not a lot of people heard about, but three goals, two really important ones as well. Do you think that we sort of missed a trick in January, not bringing in the right players, even though we probably thought we did at the time? And how important does it show for Nottingham Forest that those three players are players that might keep them up this season?
Well, they've made a massive impact, not only in the game that we played against them, but since January onwards. I do think there is something with our recruitment that It's very interesting because I was reading online on a forum about how apparently Brighton wanted to model themselves on Southampton and Leicester, and how Southampton and Leicester are now in the position where we are. So, yeah, and reading about Brighton's recruitment and how it's so proactive, they're almost readily getting the next players in because they know someone is off. They kind of know someone is playing so well, so they need to get that next one in almost straight away. It almost feels like we've had that in the past where we've had a good player and we've almost panicked to try and find their replacement. But I was thinking about it, was with Danny Ings, that we had a player that got, was it 22, 23 goals in one season and almost tied the Golden Boot for a team that was near on relegation. He was far outperforming how he should be in that Southampton side. And so we kind of knew it was inevitable that there was a chance of him going. We kind of had to cling on to that fact that it is his boyhood club. But in the back of your mind, if I was head of the transfer policy and stuff like that, I'd be every single waking day looking for that new striker because he will go at some point. And my point to where this falls back to in January is we didn't get two of our main targets in the summer as our strikers. We had two very like high profile known talents that we wanted to try and get in. They both fell through. Okay, fine. But what I'd be doing is from as soon as that window closed to the new one that opened, I'd be looking as best as I could for a striker to try and get as soon as we can on January the 1st. And you might be thinking, that's a bit dramatic. But we consistently showed it throughout October, November and into December that we needed a clinical goal scorer. And it feels like we're so reactive with our signings that we were like, oh, okay, we now need someone who can play in Nathan Jones's style and stuff like that. So we go straight away and try and sign, find something at that moment. It doesn't feel like there's any sort of planning to our transfers. They're just kind of done in the spur of the moment. And then that falls through because you have a player who's kind of fine-tuned for a system, and then we go and sack that manager a week later. So it feels like we've fallen out of that kind of Southampton way. We had players that fitted a system, and we had managers that kind of fitted into it. And we had a bit of a kind of 50-50. You had the board that had their ideology and that knowledge, and you had a manager that played into that as well. And it was kind of a collaborative effort. And it was very successful for a while, but I think we've fallen away from that. And I'm sure we could speak for hours upon this about how transfers, philosophies, ideologies, higher board members and stuff like that have all kind of all contributed to this. But yeah, I think Nottingham Forest were very direct with their transfers. I think they've been successful. They proved their quality in their game against us. And a lot of our players that we'd signed weren't very impactful at all in that game. So, yeah, I think Forest have done very well, and they very well may stay in the Premier League because of it.
Jamie, similar to what I asked Ollie, does that show that in January our season was still salvageable, but the main players that we signed, Onuachu and Sulemana, only on the bench for this game, whereas the three main players that Forest signed, they turned out to be the difference maker in all those games. Even Chris Woods come up with a goal against Manchester City that got them a point in that one. So, yes, they paid, what, 20, 25 million? But that's 1 point. That's 1 point that could really be vital.
The moral of the story is don't sign players for a manager you think you might sack. I think Pellegrino got... what did I say his name again? Guerrero?
Carrillo.
Yeah. Carrillo, yeah. Jones got tall pull, you know. Both the same, but effectively set of money spent on them. Both have failed. And it's just, like I said, it's literally pointless spending that much money, the second most spent in the Premier League in January, on players for a manager you are considering sacking. Mm. Yeah, it's just poor decisions from the board yet again, trickling down, affecting us not staying in the Premier League.
And the 4-3 goal, sadly, it was a little bit too late. James Ward-Prowse, nice to see him get another goal. I think it's his second under Selez, maybe third, I'm not too sure. And after the game, the Daily Mail released one of those, a match report, but more about Southampton and sort of echoed parts of our season. And one part that really stood out to me was where they put senior players on, were understood to have thought they overperformed last season, seemed worried and resigned this year. They would not have enough to stay up. Ollie, for me, I don't accept that. We spent £144 million overall, according to Transfermarkt. What do you think on that? Do you think that's just an excuse to get out of poor performances, or do you think they've got a point?
I still think that we did the right thing, but it was risky the way we did it. We put the investment in. We invested in youth, which always goes down well with the fans and stuff like that. But there were concerns whether this squad was going to be too inexperienced. And they had the power to change that. They had a budget. They went and spent money on players, and they allowed some senior players to leave and brought them in with youngsters. But those youngsters had inexperience. One person I was surprised that came on was Adozie. I forgot how much of an impact he had at the start of the season. I think me and you have had this exact conversation that he was someone that we were saying we were relied on too much when we were under Ralph. And we said that he was someone who we can't consistently keep getting this youngster to create the opportunities for us. We need to spread it around more. And then between managers, he's just kind of been lost in the ether. And I was genuinely surprised to see him come on as a substitute. It seems that the squad is very bloated. There's seemingly quality in there, but it doesn't get shown. There's not enough consistent results to for players to continue their performance in the side. A lot of people fall out and then new players come in. I think that's a bit of a cop-out to say that they kind of knew there wasn't going to be enough quality there, because the money went in. They decided to back the manager. They had the opportunity for him to go in the summer, but they brought in coaching staff for him instead and backed him and gave him money. And it wasn't successful. And they got the appointment wrong in January as well. That's another mistake that they made. But to already kind of write it off at the start of the season, not only do I think it's a bit cop-out, but terrible management, like at a higher superior level. That's basically like taking the Titanic and going, oh yeah, we knew it's probably going to sink anyway. Like that's not how you run a business. Like I don't
know. I think it was more the players that thought that, but do you think from a personal level that's still not really acceptable?
Well, that's not it. That's even worse. If you think the players are going to go out there thinking that they're kind of lambs to the slaughter, and then they're going to go out there and lose every game anyway, because we've seen it. The one thing, the most disappointing thing that I've had this season is the fact that we led Arsenal away from home 3-1, because you can do it. The players have the ability to do it, but they didn't. For whatever reason that is, for the other 1,000 reasons that we'll cover when we get to it at the end of the season and rant for about 5 hours, maybe on a live stream, who knows. However different ways that falls down to, the players have the ability. They can turn up for a game, and if they're at their absolute best, you can beat anyone. It's that whole cliche that you always hear, but you can beat anyone. And that's the disappointing thing. And to hear, yeah, if you're saying it's the players who think there wasn't the quality for that, that's even worse, because you should not be thinking out there. You should be thinking we can do this. And yeah, very negative. I didn't know that, but I'm genuinely shocked to hear that. That's not a good way to start a season, is it?
You sort of mentioned Sam Adozie there, and your shock that he came off the bench. Jamie, does it show another sign that that Selles has been unsure of what players to use? You know, seen in the past, Adam Armstrong came out from 5 or 6 games, not either unused or not in the squad. Aribo had that one random game where he started and hasn't played since. And Adozie's now come in after however many games, either out the squad or not being used. And then this is the point that they think, do you know what? Let's give him a go. I think he did pretty well alongside Lemana as well, because he had a go at the fullbacks. You know, it was easier for them at that point because Forrest had something to cling on to. So they had space to go into the final thirds. But do you think it's another sign that Selles has sort of not been sure what to do. So he's thought, do you know what, let's chuck Edozie on, let's chuck Sulemana on, something that people have wanted for quite a long time. And even though they didn't have a direct impact, they sort of, it felt like they were doing something at least.
Yeah, I just think it kind of shows the fact that Sellers is new to management and isn't this year. So it's his first job in senior football, and it just shows a lack of understanding. Because like you said, like why on earth would you play a Rebo that one start? You clearly have faith in him, and then not, we haven't seen him since. Like I just honestly don't understand. Like what? Why? Like Edozie is a good player. I've rated him the whole season. Like he doesn't even play for under 21s when he was out. Maybe once or twice, but he's out for a long time. And then why just randomly bring him against Forest? Like if you trust him, actually play him rather than, well, just in, not even Edozie, just with the players that aren't in the squad. Like Bree, he randomly came in that one time. Like I can't remember what game that was, but he's out for ages, has it? Randomly coming off the bench. Like if you trust them enough to come on the pitch, why just completely getting rid of them? Like for the players themselves, that must be so confusing. Like let alone the fans, as the mentality of the players, that like you have no idea what's going on. Like you can't prepare yourself for a game week if you literally have no idea what's going on. I'm surprised he performed so well.
And going back to the players, James Ward-Prowse said after the game that it's been too easy right from the first game against Spurs until now. We've not really learned anything, not really progressed. We've just taken these results as they are. And that's the most disappointing thing, when you keep doing the same thing and keep getting the same results. We've not learned from it. And it's the frustrating thing. Does it feel like we've not really progressed since that first Spurs game, that lessons haven't been learned, Ollie?
No. And I think I've read somewhere, I think it was The Athletic, that said Ward-Prowse was getting frustrated with team members that weren't listening and weren't learning from their mistakes, which is a real problem when you continue to make them. That's a deadly combination of continuing to make mistakes, not listening, and not learning. So, yeah, there's part of me that thinks you can have three different managers in one season and still can't get a consistent good run of results together. It does genuinely feel like it's the players and not the managers. I know the managers have been criticised this year for their inconsistencies, their poor decisions, their random decisions, as Jamie's talked about just in the last section. But yeah, you do kind of wonder how many people need to come through this squad and look at it to not get something out of them, to question the mentality of these players. So I think it's a very worrying thing for your captain to say that, but I think it's very truthful. So I respect his truthfulness, but then I'm also very concerned in what is going on in the background, that these players just refuse to learn from their mistakes.
Right. Three games to go, and this game against Fulham, I mean, in a way, it's huge, but if we win, but then Forest or Everton win, then we're down anyway. And do you know what? Fulham, they're a hard team to play against. 5-3 against Leicester in their recent game. Another team that's certainly struggling. And I don't think I want Leicester to go down, because they'll have a lot of soluble assets as well going into the Championship. But we're here to talk about Fulham. Jamie, what do you expect from this game? What do you expect from the fans, the atmosphere? Because it's certainly going to be a weird mood of, we're not down yet, but it's more when rather than if.
And me and Mikey are going to the game, so I am looking forward to it, because I think it'll be interesting to see how it will be when the final whistle goes. Because say if we do beat Fulham and other teams lose, I'd rather we didn't get relegated away at Brighton, just because I think they'd take that as a little, ooh, South Coast, let's have a dig. They're our rivals now. They got relegated on our ground. I'd rather that doesn't happen, and then I'd rather just lose against Fulham, so we have those two games to just, not necessarily relax, but have that pressure off the relegation and fight for ourselves and show that we are ready to come back to the Premier League next year. I don't want us to sit back and go, we're relegated now, let's not try. At this point, it's like, I can't remember what team it was, but a couple of years ago, when a team confirmed relegation, they kept fighting back, getting those wins again. I think it might have been Fulham when they went down. I can't remember, but I want to show some fight. and show that we are ready to come back. I just don't want us to go down and get battered and lose the rest of the season at what, that'd be what, 13 games without a win. I just don't want to see that. I think that's just embarrassing because we are good enough to be in the Premier League, just not this season.
Jamie raises an interesting point that I want to take a different way about us getting relegated at St Mary's. And the fact of, look, I don't want us to lose. I want us to win and whatever happens in the other games happens. But say if we did draw or say if we did lose at St Mary's and that result is confirmed, do you sort of feel that it's almost in a weird way better or how do you look at if we get relegated at St Mary's rather than Brighton? Because if you get relegated at home, you feel the entire crowd just a disappointment. Whereas if you get relegated at Brighton per se, or if it's already done by that point, there's a tiny section of fans. It's not an entire stadium, and you can sort of almost hide in a way where you can't hide in front of 28,000-30,000 home supporters who are wearing red and white.
I think it's going to be a horrible feeling no matter. But I think for the players who are retaining in the squad, it might be a very useful tool for them to, I mean, obviously no one wants to have that feeling of getting relegated, but I also think thinking back to that horrible feeling is a very good motivator, thinking this is how horrible this feeling is, let's not try and ever feel this bad again kind of thing, because this is what happens when you continue to make mistakes, you fall out of the best league. So I also think it's a kind of, I don't know, I think it would be more if it was at home. I can't believe we're planning when we want to get relegated now. This is crazy. But I feel it could be a real kind of disconnect with the fans to do it away from home. Imagine traveling to Brighton to see your team get relegated. That's a real kicker. So I kind of want the players to soak in that feeling of getting relegated, knowing how horrible that feeling is, knowing you can do better, and hopefully that really pushes them on in the Championship and to fight and get back into the Premier League. And I think doing that at the stadium with your home fans might kind of click with them more. I also think it would provide a bit more of, a clean slate going into the last two games. So if it did happen, there is a silver lining that you've got two final games to kind of reinvent yourself. And it means it doesn't have to go to the last day, because that can be really a real kicker as well. Not that I think it will, but it might take a little bit of the hostility away of that kind of final game of the season, because I can imagine that could get a little bit ugly. I don't know what it was like. I'm fortunate in the fact that I didn't see, or when I did see us get relegated, I was about 7. So it doesn't really stick in my mind as much. But I can imagine there'd be a lot of frustration from the fans. So it's not going to be pleasant either way, is it? Let's be honest. It's like this is not a nice choice. And it's not our choice. It's the players' choice. If they turn up and play the absolute best they can, we can have a win against Fulham and turn things around a little bit, at least try and break this this losing streak. So to be honest, Harry, I can't really remember your question. Do I want to see us get relegated at home to Fulham? No, I'd love us to see us win, to be honest. I feel like it's the least that the fans deserve. And I think wherever the relegation happens, I don't think it's important as seeing the players actually play their best in front of the home fans and try and give them a little bit of joy that they haven't had at all this season.
And Jamie, final one, what do you expect from this upcoming game and who do you want to see play? We sort of talked about Salah's picking rabbits out of hats at times, but very little magic has been shown. But what do you expect from that?
I don't know, because Fulham are kind of aren't as good as they were at the start of the season. So that's why I kind of have a little bit of hope for a win against them. But it's like, maybe Dozy would be quite nice. Starting, he did a nice few minutes again at Forest, and I think he could be a very valuable player for us next year. No, I just like, I don't know, just players I'll miss when they leave. Like, nice to see Prowsey in person for the last time. It'll be, I don't know, nice to see Kyle Peters play. He's not a nice guy. But it's just, I don't even know, Harry. I'm just fed up with the whole thing. I'm going to be at the game, and as, like I said with Mikey, I just know I'm going to be horrifically upset. It'll be the worst I've ever felt watching Saints, and that's kind of what's taking my mind rather than who's playing, not to discredit your question. But it's just, I just know I'm going to be upset, and I'm preparing myself for that, and even though I'm going out my way to go to this game, I just know that we're going down, and it's just really hard to think about. It just is upsetting. I don't know. So a little rant there to go against your question, but yeah.
Tizar, get the energy up. Back up again. Back up again. Come on.
Ollie, what positives can we take out of this game? If there's anything that going into it that you can sort of think from the Nottingham Forest game was the only thing positive you could take out of there that could possibly bring into this one before our score predictions.
I mean, we scored 3 goals. We haven't seen that in a while. So maybe we're on a red hot goal scoring form and the defence turn into like prime AC Milan. They keep a clean sheet and we win 3-0. I mean, that's doable, right? No,
physically,
I'm not sure.
Yes. Realistically, no.
What alpha positives can we take? I do think that Adozie beat someone, put the in the box, and actually created some opportunities, which was quite exciting. Suleimana's always quick on the break, and he did a lovely kind of knock it round and went all the way around the other player and went into the box. That was quite nice. So just a little bit of individual display, a bit of excitement. That would get the fans going. Maybe, the voice is gone. Maybe I'm too excited. starting the game off early, creating the fans a bit of energy to go off. And I do think the fans will genuinely respond. They know how much is on the line. And if we can start off, maybe get an early goal, I think the fans will really back them and try and do best they can to get the absolute most out of this game, because they haven't had that many chances to see a win at home this season. So, yeah, start off quick. Just throw everything at them for like the first 20 minutes and see what happens. Who knows? That would be my team talk.
Right, score prediction time it is. I'm going to go for a 1-1. Jamie, what do you think?
2-0 Fulham.
Oh, no. When Jamie's...
Oh, no, if Jamie's prediction losses, no.
What's going on here?
First time in the season.
Blimey.
Oh, no. That is not good. I'm questioning everything right now. I'm like, what is going on? Harry's predicted a draw, so that means we're getting relegated on a draw, which is probably the most depressing way we could get relegated.
Or a 1-0 loss to make it the 12th of the season.
Yeah, that could be pretty poor.
Or just a third 9-0.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine? No one would be at the stadium at the end. No one would be there. They would all leave.
Jamie and Mikey.
I would stay.
Would you? Yeah. You're a brave man.
Well, Mikey stayed for the first 9-0, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did.
He could do another.
Right, Ollie, stop avoiding the question. What do you think the score's prediction is going to be?
I'd love a win. Can you imagine if we got like a cheeky 1-0? Just nicked it and just held on for dear life and got a 1-0. Can you imagine? I can't, but just think about it. Just dream. Let's dream, people.
Yeah. I mean, it would be the most Southampton thing ever to win all of our 3 games and still go down on goal difference. Or something like that. Have all of that go for us and then go down. But we've all thought different things. So someone... it's going to be right. It probably is going to be Jamie, but I hope it's Ollie. And in a way, it'd be cool if it was me. I don't know. But anyway, that's enough for this podcast. We talked about Nottingham Forest, the thrilling 4-3 game that sadly didn't go our way and put us on the edge of relegation. We looked at the game against Fulham, what could happen there, and the score prediction for it as well. I've been Harry Tizzle. I've been joined by Ollie Boast.
Thank you very much for listening.
Jamie Allen.
Thank you very much, guys. And thank you to Harry for hosting the episode.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Hopefully, the next time you hear us, we won't be relegated, but that could be possible.
Oh, that's so sad.
And against Brighton as well. Preview that game against the Seagulls. And we'll see you next week.
This is our keep this in, Harry. Edit. This is our last podcast in the Premier League.
It could very well.
Not technically, but well.